of the original Big Bad Wolf. They travel around terrorizing villages and attacking unsuspecting travelers, Froggy said. Oh, joy, Connor said sarcastically. I'm sorry I asked. But besides that, things are very peaceful throughout the kingdoms, Froggy said. His voice drifted off, and uncertainty grew on his face. That was until a week ago. The twins leaned forward. What happened a week ago? Alex asked. The evil queen escaped from the dungeons of Snow White's palace, Froggy told them. I thought everyone had heard. It's news to us, Connor said. That can't be good, Alex said. How'd she escape? No one knows, Froggy said. She just vanished along with her magic mirror. Snow White's army has been searching throughout all the kingdoms for her. They pass through these woods at least twice a day. So far, they found nothing, not even a footprint, to lead them in her direction. Do you think they're going to find her? Connor asked. I hope so, Froggy said. She's a very dangerous woman. She's the only queen in history to lose her throne. I couldn't imagine the revenge she must be seeking. Who knows what she's planning to do next? Alex suddenly became very tense. It had just occurred to her that, along with all the characters she had grown up loving, all the ones she hated and feared actually existed too. It made her feel very uneasy and very unsafe. The fire in the fireplace began to fade, and Froggy got up to add another log. The twins' eyes and mouths were wide open, and their heads were spinning from all this new information. Exactly how far away do you live from here? Froggy asked as he sat back down across from them. The twins looked to each other, back at Froggy, and then back at each other. They didn't know what to tell him. Would he believe them if they told him the truth? It's practically a different world, Connor said. Alex shot him a dirty look, and then nervously laughed, trying to make light of what her brother just said. Froggy wasn't laughing. He sat straight up in his seat, and his face grew very still, with an intensity in his eyes, as if he had found the solution to a mystery. Interesting, Froggy said, eyeing the twins back and forth. Because if I didn't know better, just from the way you dress and the way you speak, and the way you are so surprised at basic history, I would say that there was a very good chance you are indeed from a different world. They didn't understand what he was trying to say. Did he know something that they didn't? Just out of curiosity, have you ever heard of another world? Alex asked him. Or preferably how to get back to it? Connor added. Froggy studied their faces even more intently for a moment. He got up again and went to a bookshelf on the far side of the room. He rustled through the books, looking for something of special interest. Finally, he found it, a small leather-bound journal with a red band around it. Have either of you ever heard of the wishing spell? Froggy asked the twins. Alex and Connor shook their heads. Froggy flipped through the pages of the journal. I assume not, he said. It's a legendary spell comprised of a list of items, and apparently, when you put the items together, you are granted one wish. It doesn't matter how extravagant the wish is. The wishing spell will grant it. Many people believe that it's only a myth, and I did too, until I found this journal. What does the journal have to do with anything? Connor asked. It was written by a man from the Charming Kingdom, Froggy said. He managed to discover what these items were, and he recorded his journey to find them. His one wish was to reunite with the woman he loved, and in the journal, he claimed she lived in another world. Alex and Connor sat straight up. They were sitting on the edges of their seats without realizing it. I thought the man writing the journal was crazy. I didn't believe another world could exist until I began finding your books, Alex. And then when I saw you bickering in the forest, I knew you two were different, Froggy said. I knew you had to be from the place that that man had written about. The twins were happy the truth was out. Froggy seemed genuinely excited about the whole thing. Did he make it? Alex asked. Did the man cross over into the other world? He must have, Froggy said. The journal ends when he found the last item. Froggy handed the twins the journal and took a seat in his chair. Wherever you're from, if it's home that you wish to go back to, I think your best chance is by following this journal. The twins went silent for a moment. They stared down at the journal in his hands with immense hope. What items does the spell require? Alex asked. All sorts from all over, Froggy told her. But the journal gives great instructions on where and how to find them. Some of them are very dangerous to get to.
Of course they are, Connor said. Typical.
If the spell will grant whatever wish you want, why didn't you search for the items and wish to be human again? Alex asked Froggy. Froggy thought about this for a moment. It was a question he had asked himself many times, and he was ashamed of the answer.
I've kept the journal all these years in case I ever decided to,
Froggy explained with difficulty.
But searching for the items would mean I'd have to face the world looking like this. And, frankly, children, that's something I'm not ready to do. It's something I don't think I'll ever be able to do.
He spoke from a place of deep sadness. Clearly, he wasn't finished learning the witch's lesson yet.
It's getting late, Froggy said. Why don't you sleep on it and decide what you want to do in the morning? You're welcome to stay here as long as you'd like.
Thank you, Alex said. I hope we aren't a bother.
No bother at all,
Froggy smiled earnestly. Froggy got them a large blanket to share. He blew out all the lamps and put out the fire in the fireplace. Alex and Connor tossed and turned with the thoughts of the wishing spell all night, but there was no decision to make. If the journal offered a possible way home, they would have to do everything and anything it instructed them to. They had no choice. They were about to embark on the greatest scavenger hunt of their lives. Chapter 6. The Dwarf Forests.
I packed you some food, a couple blankets, and a few gold coins I've been saving,
Froggy told the twins, and handed Connor a sheepskin satchel.
Thank you so much, Alex said. It's so kind of you.
Now, when you say food, what exactly are you referring to?
Connor asked, holding the satchel a safe distance away from him.
Some rolls and apples, Froggy told him.
Oh, good, Connor said, relieved.
Froggy handed Alex the map and journal they had been looking at the previous night.
Are you sure you're ready for this?
Froggy asked them.
You're both awfully young to be going on a quest like this.
Alex and Connor looked to each other, each thinking the same thing. It was hard enough to navigate around their own world at their age. Could they really travel around a different world altogether without the help of an adult? But the twins found reassurance in each other's eyes. They knew that, through it all, they'd at least have each other.
We really don't have any other choice, Alex said. Thank you so much for all your help, Froggy. We would still be lost in the woods without you.
Froggy smiled widely and nodded.
Of course, he said. I should be thanking you. I rarely have an opportunity to feel so useful.
Are you sure you don't want to come with us?
Alex asked.
A map is great and all, but a tour guide would be much better.
At first, Froggy's smile grew with excitement as he was tempted by the idea. The thought of traveling out into the world and leaving his hole-in-the-ground home was so alluring, it was clear he could feel the temptation throughout his entire body. However, his fears and insecurities about the outside world seeing him and what he had become erased the opportunity from his mind.
I can't, children, Froggy said with a heavy heart. But I wish you the best.
The twins were disappointed, but they understood. It was difficult for them even to go to school with just a small blemish on their faces. They couldn't imagine the stress of facing the world as an enormous amphibian.
It's very important that you get out of the dwarf forest by sundown, Froggy instructed. Go to the path and travel south into the Corner Kingdom. It's a few hours' walk, but you'll be safer there. Travel as quickly and quietly as you can. Promise me.
The twins promised. Alex gave Froggy a big hug and kissed his cheek. Connor shook his hand and then wiped it on his pants.
I hope we see each other again, Alex told him.
That would be lovely, but for your sakes, I hope we don't,
Froggy said, and winked. Connor clapped his hands.
All right, those items for the wishing spell aren't going to find themselves, he said. Let's go.
The twins pushed open the door and climbed up from inside the underground home. As they headed into the forest, Froggy waved goodbye until he was out of their sight. Soon, they were back on the dirt path they had landed on the previous day, and they headed south as they had been instructed. It was very unnerving for the twins to be alone on the path now that they understood the dangers of the forest. They regretted not trying harder to persuade Froggy into coming with them. They jumped at every tiny sound the trees made. Alex and Connor remained silent for the first hour or so as they walked, afraid that their voices would attract unwanted attention from some of the creatures Froggy had warned them about.
We're very brave,
Alex finally said to her brother, breaking the silence.
We're very stupid, Connor said.
The path curved through the forest, revealing new trees and bushes every few feet. After some time had passed, the twins could feel their nerves and tension calm. Their pace became slower and slower the more they walked, as they became more comfortable with being in the forest. Connor let out a long sigh.
What's that for? Alex asked him.
I was just thinking, Connor said. Alice went to Wonderland after she fell into a rabbit hole. Dorothy's whole house was scooped up by a tornado that dropped her off in Oz. The Narnia kids traveled through an old wardrobe, and we ended up in the fairy tale world by falling through a book.
Where are you going with this, Connor? Alex said.
I'm just saying, it's kind of lame compared to the others, Connor said with another sigh. I wonder if there's a support group for people like us. You know, people who accidentally travel into other dimensions and whatnot.
Alex was appalled. Do you not get how lucky we are? She said. Think about all the things we're going to see. Think about all the people we're going to meet. We're going to be experiencing things no one else in our world ever has.
Connor rolled his eyes. I'll feel lucky as soon as we get back home.
Alex reached into her bag and pulled out their map. Her eyes became fixated on it, and she only looked up every minute or so to make sure she wasn't about to walk into a tree. Every few seconds, she'd snicker or smile when she discovered something new. She looked like a tourist.
Shouldn't we be reading the journal? Connor asked.
We need to make a list of the wishing spell items and find out where we can find them. We will, Alex said passively. There'll be plenty of time for that.
Connor was getting frustrated with her.
Did she not realize how serious the situation was?
We need to go home, Connor said. What are we waiting for?
There are just a couple things I would like to see before we go home, Alex told him.
What are you talking about?
Connor said, his volume and temper rising. We're in the fairy tale world, Connor. We should make the most of it while we're here, Alex said. Who else gets the chance to see Cinderella's palace, or Jack's beanstalk, or Rapunzel's tower in person?
Connor's mouth and eyes were wide open. He couldn't believe what his sister was saying. We're stuck in another world and you want to go sightseeing? He said. Are you hearing yourself right now? Do you know how crazy you sound?
She stopped walking and turned to face her brother. There was seriousness and desperation in her eyes. Connor, the last year of our lives has been horrible. We've lost everything but Mom and each other, Alex said. Every night I've wished for a fairy godmother to magically appear and make everything better, and now we're in a place where that is a possibility. I don't have friends to go home to like you do. The only friends I've ever known live here, and I'm not going home until I meet them.
Alex continued walking down the path. Connor was absolutely dumbstruck. Why am I being the logical one? Connor questioned. You're always overthinking everything. How are you not out of your mind with worry?
What's there to be worried about? Alex asked him with a laugh.
For starters, what's Mom gonna do when she finds out we're missing? Connor pointed out. She'll think we were kidnapped, and she has enough to worry about already.
Alex knew he was right, but her desire to see the fairy tale world was so strong that she was able to ignore him. All I need is a day or two, Alex said. That'll give us plenty of time.
How are you so sure these worlds run on the same time schedule? Connor panicked. Think about it. The stories of Cinderella and Red Riding Hood have been around for hundreds of years in our world, but it only seems like a decade or less has gone by here since. A couple days here and Mom could be in her 80s when we get home.
Connor rubbed his head. It hurt from thinking so hard. Alex was listening more than she wanted to. He was practically repeating word for word what the logical voices in her head were saying.
What if something happens while we're gone? Connor asked. What if we get back and apes or aliens have taken over our planet? If I miss that, I will never forgive you.
Alex stopped walking and looked up from the map. A very odd expression appeared on her face.
Didn't think of that, did you?
Connor asked her, but Alex wasn't listening to him. Something else entirely had caught her attention.
Do you smell that?
Alex asked.
What? Connor said. All I smell are trees and dirt.
Alex took a couple steps further.
No, it's something else. It's sweet, like something's baking.
Connor sniffed. Sure enough, a scrumptious smell was drifting through the air.
It smells like gingerbread, Alex said.
She looked at her brother with large, excited eyes.
Oh no, Connor said.
Before he could stop her, Alex took off running into the trees, away from the path, toward the direction that aroma was coming from.
Alex, wait! Connor ordered. Come back! You don't know where you're going!
Alex bolted through the trees, jumping over boulders and bushes as she passed them. The scent became stronger and stronger the farther she strayed from the path. Connor was right behind her, urging her to turn around. Finally, Alex came to a halt, and Connor bumped into her. She found exactly what she was hoping to see. A small gingerbread house sat in between two large trees. White frosting covered its pointed roof. Gumdrops were clumped around like shrubbery, and candy canes lined the path to the front door like a picket fence.
Look, Connor,
Alex said, catching her breath.
It's a gingerbread house, a real gingerbread house. Look how cute it is.
Whoa, Connor said. I feel like I may get diabetes just from looking at that place.
Let's go inside,
Alex said, and stepped toward the house. Connor grabbed her arm.
Have you lost your mind? Do the words Hansel and Gretel cannibalism incident mean anything to you?
I just want to peek inside for a second. Only one second.
The door of the gingerbread house slowly opened. Alex and Connor froze. A large hooded figure squeezed out of the door and then raised its head to stare at the twins. It was, undoubtedly, a witch. And although they had never seen a real witch to make a comparison to, she was more grotesque than they could have imagined. Her skin was wrinkled and pale with a yellowish tint. Her eyes were bloodshot and bulged out of her head. She was hunched over and had an enormous hump on her back.
Hello, children,
the witch said. Her voice was high-pitched and crackly.
Would you care to join me for a bite to eat?
It was impossible for the twins to hide their fear. They both stood still, staring at her as if she were a rabid Tyrannosaurus Rex about to pounce on them at any moment.
No, thank you, Alex said. We're just passing by. You have a lovely home.
They slowly backed up, one foot at a time.
Wouldn't you like to see the inside?
The witch asked. The inside of whom? Connor said, and Alex elbowed him.
Don't be silly, kiddies. Come inside,
said the witch, losing her patience. She extended an inviting, shaking hand toward them. They noticed it was covered in burn marks, perhaps from the last time she had visitors.
I thought the witch died at the end of Hansel and Gretel, Alex whispered to Connor.
Maybe she got hold of a fire extinguisher after they left, Connor whispered back. They continued backing slowly away from her.
Thank you so much for the invitation, but we really need to get going, Alex said.
We're on a really tight schedule, Connor added. We're meeting a couple dwarfs for coffee in a half hour, so we better get a move on.
They quickly took off in the direction they'd come from, but came to a jarring stop when the witch suddenly appeared in front of them with a pop. They tried running back the other way, but the witch just appeared in front of them again with a snap. They were trapped.
You aren't going anywhere,
the witch said.
She seemed to grow taller, and her eyes bulged bigger as her patience ran out.
Now be nice little chickies and follow me inside.
Alex, this is like one of those bad videos about strangers from the first grade, Connor whispered to her. Do you still have your kidnapping whistle?
You don't want to eat us, Alex told the witch. We've been walking for a while, so we're really dehydrated. We're practically just skin and bone.
The witch was definitely growing. Her hump shrank as her body rose higher.
Your friend seems to be rather plump,
the witch said, looking at Connor like a praying mantis about to strike.
He has more than enough to spare.
She was practically salivating. I beg your pardon. Connor was so offended he forgot how terrifying she was. I'll have you know I'm on the edge of another growth spurt, and I always get a little pudgy before one.
Connor, please don't,
Alex tried, but was too late. Why do you want your victims chubby anyway? Wouldn't it be healthier if they were muscular and fit? Connor said. The witch looked at the side and raised an eyebrow. She had never considered this. Her consideration must have distracted her from attacking the twins, because she began to shrink back to her normal, humped shape. If you ask me, Connor continued, you should turn your gingerbread house into a gingerbread gym and health club. Alex often couldn't believe the crazy things that her brother said, but this one took the cake.
What a delicious idea,
the witch cackled.
I'll rebuild as soon as I'm finished with you.
The witch began to grow again. This time, her mouth opened wide, and a set of jagged teeth grew out of it. She was going in for the attack. Alex screamed,
Wait!
With her hands covering her face, she said,
You owe him!
The witch recoiled into her smaller form.
I owe him?
She asked.
Yes, isn't that how it works?
Alex said.
He presented you with an idea, and now you owe him a wish.
A wish?
The witch asked.
A wish?
Connor asked. Alex nodded convincingly. The witch grunted.
Yes, the happily ever after simply just enacted a new law, Alex said, thinking on the tips of her toes. Any witch presented with a good idea must return the favor by granting a wish.
Yeah, said Connor, going along with it. Don't make Mother Goose fly down here. She'll let her geese loose on you, and some of them lay golden eggs, and that can't feel good. Who knows how aggressive they'll be?
Fine,
the witch said.
I shall grant you one wish, but only because I don't want to deal with those fluttering freaks. Again.
Connor leaned close to his sister.
What should I wish for? Should I wish to go home?
He whispered.
No, she'll try to trick us with whatever we wish for. It has to be really specific, Alex said.
Hurry, child, I'm hungry,
the witch demanded.
Okay, said Connor, thinking as fast as he could.
It had to be a good one. It had to help him get out of the situation.
I wish you would become a vegetarian, he said to the witch.
Alex turned her head sharply toward her brother.
That's what you picked?
Very well,
the witch shrieked. The twins weren't sure if she knew what a vegetarian was. She reached her hands toward the sky and clapped, making a sound as loud as thunder. The twins ducked, but the witch appeared to have done the trick. The witch's hump faded away, the yellowish tint of her skin disappeared, and her bloodshot eyes calmed.
I've lost my appetite, the witch said.
She shrugged her shoulders, turned away from Alex and Connor, and walked into the gingerbread house, slamming the door behind her. Alex and Connor took a deep breath. Their bodies had never been so tense.
That was a close one, Alex said.
You're welcome, Connor said.
How did you think of wishing for her to become a vegetarian?
Alex asked.
Connor scratched his head. It was the only sure way I knew she wouldn't eat us.
Alex smiled at him. She wasn't given too many moments to be proud of her brother, so when the chance came, she soaked it up for all it was worth.
Nice job, but let's get out of here in case your wish wears off.
The twins hurried back through the forest until they returned to the path. They continued heading south, this time keeping to a faster pace. They had had their first dangerous encounter in the fairy tale world, and they weren't in a hurry for the next. Alex and Connor had been hurrying along the path for a while when Connor said,
Alex, I've got to sit down. I feel like my legs are going to fall off.
Connor, we have to keep moving. It's already afternoon, and Froggy said we need to cross into the Corner Kingdom before nightfall,
Alex warned.
Easy for him to say. He has frog legs, Connor said through heavy breathing. Just for a couple minutes, and then we'll keep going, I promise.
All right, but let's find someplace safe, Alex said.
They continued walking a little farther and found a pleasant opening between some trees. Connor found a fallen tree to sit on and catch his breath. Alex looked around at the trees of the forest, noticing that they were all different shapes and sizes and shades of green. She was still bewildered by everything that had happened.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Alex said.
All of this has been at our fingertips the whole time, and we never knew.
She took a seat next to her brother, grinning from ear to ear.
What do you think Dad and Grandma would make of all this?
Alex asked him.
What do you think they would say if they knew all of this was actually real?
From the way they always talked about fairy tales, you'd think they did, Connor said.
I couldn't help but smile at the thought.
I have 1,000 reasons why I wish Dad was still alive, Alex said. But now I wish it more than ever, just so we could bring him back and show all of this to him and Grandma.
We have to get back first, Connor reminded her. And while we're on the subject, I think we should take a look at that journal. The sooner we read it, the sooner we can get back home.
I know, she told him. But we should at least see a castle or a palace first. Dad and Grandma would have wanted us to.
Connor grunted.
Alex, we just barely escaped being lunch for a witch. We can't waste any more time.
The sounds of a few twigs snapping came from across the clearing as something approached. Alex and Connor ducked down behind the fallen tree, hidden from view. A cream-colored horse slowly traveled into the clearing. It picked up its hooves in a peculiar manner, as if it had been trained to tiptoe. A woman was riding the horse, and she looked cautiously around the clearing as they entered it. She was young and beautiful. Her eyes were big and blue, and her hair was half up and flowed into long, golden curls. She wore a long, maroon knit coat with black leggings and very tall boots. The woman and her horse moved covertly into the center of the clearing.
Easy, Porridge, said the woman, stroking the horse. That's a good girl. Nice and slow.
She hopped down from the horse and made her way to a tree. Alex could see that some sort of paper was pinned to it, and after taking a closer look, saw it was the wanted poster for Goldilocks that she'd seen the day before. The woman shook her head after reading it. She ripped it off the tree and crumpled it up.
Who is that? What is she doing?
Connor whispered to his sister.
Do I look psychic to you?
Alex whispered back at him. Suddenly, the woman's head jerked in their direction. Whoever she was, she had a remarkable sense of hearing. She drew a large sword from inside her coat and raised it high in the air. Her gaze was stern and determined. She was obviously someone to be reckoned with. She stepped closer to where Alex and Connor were hiding. A piercing wolf howl boomed through the forest. It was so loud that Alex and Connor covered their ears. The woman spun around and pointed her sword in the opposite direction of the twins.
Porridge, get ready. We're about to have company, she said.
Who? Alex and Connor mouthed to each other.
Creeping through the trees toward them were half a dozen wolves. However, these wolves were unlike any the twins had ever seen before. They were four times the size of any normal wolf of their world. Their fur was jet black and matted. Their eyes were red, and their snouts were wide. These wolves were ready to kill at any minute. Without a doubt, the twins had come face to face with the big bad wolf pack.
Alex and Connor held on to each other, shaking with fear. The woman in the maroon coat never showed a hint of panic. She pointed her sword at the largest of the wolves, standing in the middle of the pack. The wolves growled and grit their teeth toward her.
Hello, Malum Claw, the woman said.
Hello, Goldilocks,
Malum Claw growled. The twins were both in silent hysterics.
Goldilocks! That's Goldilocks!
Alex mouthed to Connor.
The wolf talks! It talks!
He mouthed back to her.
I'm surprised you're not chained down in some Red Riding Hood Kingdom jail cell yet,
Malum Claw said to Goldilocks.
I'm surprised you haven't been turned into a rug for a child's nursery yet, Goldilocks said. What brings you to this part of the forest? There isn't an innocent village for your pack to torment for miles.
Goldilocks never lowered her sword. The other wolves in Malum Claw's pack slowly surrounded her in porridge.
My pack is hungry. We've stopped for an afternoon snack, the wolf said.
Have you really come to eat me? Goldilocks said. I thought you'd have learned your lesson by now. I bite back.
She gripped her sword even tighter.
Malum Claw laughed.
The wolf can laugh! It can laugh!
Connor mouthed to Alex.
You are far too small a portion,
Malum Claw told her with an evil, wolfish grin.
Your horse, however, has plenty to go around.
Alex and Connor had never seen a horse look as frightened as Porridge did. Had she not been so light-colored, they would have sworn she had gone pale.
If you so much as scratch her, I will wear you as a coat. Do you understand me?
Goldilocks warned him.
All people do in this world is eat one another,
Connor whispered to Alex, and as soon as he did, he knew he shouldn't have. A wolf turned in the twins' direction.
Malum Claw, I think I just heard something, it growled.
Alex covered her mouth so as not to scream. The wolf began sniffing vigorously in the air.
I smell two children, one boy and one girl.
Goldilocks seemed as surprised as the rest of the wolves to learn this. So that was who she had heard behind her moments before. The twins could hear their own heartbeats. What was going to happen next? Was Goldilocks going to rat them out to save her horse? Had they just narrowly escaped being devoured by a witch only to be eaten by a pack of overgrown wolves?
I'm afraid you just missed them, Goldilocks said.
I frightened them away just like I frightened you the last time our paths crossed.
Then horse it is, Malum Claw declared.
All the wolves howled together. It was deafening. They began circling Goldilocks and Porridge, getting closer and closer. The wolves snapped at them with their enormous jaws, and Goldilocks swung her sword at them. One wolf tried to pounce on Porridge, but the horse kicked him away with her hind legs. Another wolf tried to bite Goldilocks, but she struck him with her sword, drawing blood, and he whimpered away. Goldilocks was the best swordswoman the twins had ever seen. Anytime one of the wolves got so much as a claw close to her or her horse, she was quick to shield them. Porridge wasn't so bad herself. She wasn't shy about kicking away any wolf that was too close for comfort. A wolf leaped and sank its claws into Porridge's back. The horse bucked to free herself. In one quick slice, Goldilocks chopped one of the wolf's paws off. He limped into the forest, howling in pain. Two wolves teamed up on Goldilocks. One leaped toward her, and she tripped over the other one. Her sword flew into the air and landed close to where the twins were hiding. Goldilocks was on the ground, unarmed. The wolves were closing in on her and the horse, going in for the kill.
Catch!
Connor yelled, and tossed the sword straight to her. Goldilocks swung it hard at the wolves closing in on her, leaving large gashes in their muzzles.
Retreat!
Malum Claw ordered his pack.
No snack is worth all this trouble.
The wolves stampeded into the forest, growling and howling in anger, letting the rest of the forest know they were on their way.
Until we meet again, Goldilocks,
Malum Claw called out, as he disappeared into the trees with the rest of the wolves. Goldilocks got to her feet and put her sword away. She was out of breath and, now that the enemy had left, much more vulnerable than she had shown in combat. She petted Porridge's nose,
and dabbed the horse's wounds with the fabric of her coat.
Good girl, Porridge, Goldilocks said.
She turned and faced the fallen tree Alex and Connor were hiding behind.
You can come out now, Goldilocks said.
The twins were hesitant at first. Then Connor popped up and exclaimed,
That was awesome!
Connor,
Alex said, popping up beside him.
That was one heck of a fight, Connor continued. You know, at first I really thought they had you. I never expected a girl and her horse could be any match for six hungry wolves. But you impressed me. Where did you learn to fight like that?
Goldilocks was not amused by his enthusiasm. When you've been on the run as long as I have, you pick up a few tricks here and there. She turned around and remounted her horse with a jump.
So it is really you, Alex asked. Are you really Goldilocks? The woman wanted dead or alive for all her crimes?
Don't believe everything you read, she said sternly, and then pulled on Porridge's reins and galloped away. But she only traveled a few feet before she steered Porridge back to the twins.
Thank you for your assistance, Goldilocks said.
Connor nodded.
Here, take this, in case you need it.
Goldilocks reached into the side of her boot and pulled out a silver dagger. She tossed it on the ground.
Now get as far away from here as possible. Those wolves will be back sooner than you expect.
And with that said, Goldilocks and Porridge galloped off into the forest. Alex and Connor stood motionless, watching her ride off out of sight.
That was amazing, Connor said.
He retrieved the dagger from the ground and put it inside their satchel.
As terrifying as that was, it was kind of nice to see another human for a change.
We'd better get out of here, Alex said, and this time, we aren't stopping until we know we're out of the dwarf forests.
Connor couldn't agree more. The twins continued down the dirt path, running this time. They had experienced more danger today than they had ever experienced in their entire lives. Unfortunately for them, it wouldn't be their last encounter with Goldilocks, the Big Bad Wolf Pack, or the Dwarf Forests. Chapter 7. Rapunzel's Tower. The twins had been running for almost an hour straight, and they were starting to feel it. Their adrenaline was slowly running out, and the pains in their sides were increasing with every step they took. But since something dangerous seemed to happen every time they stopped moving, they were motivated to keep going.
After all this running, PE testing should be a breeze, Connor said through heavy wheezes.
We're almost there,
Alex said unconvincingly.
Just a little farther.
The forest had changed as they ran through it. The trees weren't so thick, and there was more space and grass between them. More sunlight fell through the branches, so nothing was in the dark. The path became wider, too, and much more visible. The twins didn't feel threatened by their surroundings. The forest almost grew friendlier the closer they traveled to the Corner Kingdom. Connor collapsed to the ground. He was breathing harder than a fish out of water.
I can't run anymore. I can't take another step,
he said, with his limbs spread out as if he were making a snow angel in the dirt.
We can't stop moving until we get into the Corner Kingdom,
Alex reminded him, through her own heavy breathing.
I think we're there, Connor said.
How do you know?
Alex asked.
That's how, Connor said,
and pointed upward. In the distance, a tall tower was visible above the treetops. It was circular and made of square stones. There was a single window near the top, just below the pointed roof made of hay. It was partially covered in thick vines of ivy. Alex gasped and clutched her hands together.
It's Rapunzel's tower,
Alex said, and her eyes became a little misty at the sight of it.
Are you seriously crying?
Said Connor, who was still on the ground.
It's just how I imagined it, Alex said. Get up. We're getting a closer look.
Alex yanked on her brother's arm until he climbed to his feet, and the twins walked through the trees until they came to the base of the tower. It was even taller than it looked, a few hundred feet at least. The twins' necks began to ache after looking up at the tower for a while. A large golden plaque was displayed in the ground in front of it that said, Queen Rapunzel's Tower.
It must have been so hard for her, Alex said. Seeing people in places so far away and never being able to visit them?
At least she never had to worry about burglars, Connor said.
I've got to go up there, Alex said.
Do you have a jetpack or a grappling hook that I'm unaware of?
Connor asked her.
No, I'll have to climb it,
Alex said, surprising herself with a declaration.
You have officially lost your mind, Connor said.
We've almost been killed twice, and we haven't even been here a full day yet. We need to stop fooling around and find a way home, Alex. What part of that don't you understand?
Look, Alex said, I'm going to climb up there for just a few minutes, and then as soon as I climb back down, we'll read the journal and find out what all the wishing spell items are, okay?
Alex, Connor began. His face was turning pink.
Please, Connor, Alex said. I need to do this, or I'll regret it forever.
Connor shook his head with the frustration that only a sibling could cause. He wanted to lecture her about how childish she was acting, but the way she was looking at him, with her big, wanting eyes, prevented him. It was so rare that Alex ever needed something. He supposed one last stop couldn't hurt.
Don't kill yourself, Connor said. But while you're up there, I'm going to start reading the journal and make a list of the wishing spell items we need to find.
Alex happily nodded and put her bag on the ground. She stretched for the climb she was about to make. Connor sat on the ground and began flipping through the pages of the journal. Climbing the tower was easier said than done. After searching around the base of the tower for a place to put her first step, Alex could tell why a long train of golden hair might be needed to get to the top of it. Eventually, she found a stone block with a chip large enough to put her foot in and take her first step.
Here I go, Alex said. Gosh, I wish I had a camera.
Trust me, Connor said. The real Alex I know isn't going to want proof of this.
It was like climbing the world's most difficult rock climbing wall. She relied on cracks and chips and uneven bricks sticking out just enough to put her hands and feet on. She moved slowly but carefully. If she were any larger, it wouldn't have worked.
You're still at the bottom, Connor said, looking up from the journal after a few minutes.
Shut up, Connor, Alex yelled back at him.
I'm just saying, at the rate you're going, Mom's going to be 80 by the time we get home, whether there's a time difference or not, he said.
After some time had gone by and she had gotten the hang of it, Alex moved more quickly, carefully pulling herself up using the ivy. The higher she climbed, the less she looked down at the ground, fearing it would tamper with her effort to reach the top. She was so determined to see the top of the tower, to be in the room where Rapunzel had lived, and to see what Rapunzel had seen through her window every day. She wanted to be where somebody else had been during the loneliest times of their life. Rapunzel's story had always been so easy for Alex to identify with. Alex felt she was in a tower of her own, looking at the world from an unreachable location. She was almost halfway up the tower by now, and she was above all the trees in the forest. Any tiny misstep would no longer result in a potential injury. It would mean death.
There's a reason the witch put Rapunzel up there, you know, Connor called up to her, so no one could reach her.
I'm not listening to you, Alex said, and then stupidly looked down.
Beads of sweat appeared on Alex's forehead. She felt like her heart had fallen out of her body. What was she doing? There was no way she could climb back down. Was she really risking her life just to see the inside of a tower? If she ever reached the top, would she be able to get back down? Would she have to wait until her hair grew long enough to climb before she saw anyone again? What would Connor do if she got stuck up there? Would he try to find the fairy tale world equivalent to a fire department with a ladder long enough to get her down? Or would he find the wishing spell items on his own and go home without her? The more Alex worried, the more she climbed. She knew it wouldn't be productive to worry and stay still, so she just kept going. It felt like hours had gone by. She looked up. She was only a few feet away from the window. Just a few more feet and she'd be there. Finally, she felt the windowsill with her hands and slowly pulled herself up to it, then through it. She was almost through the window. Alex swung her legs over the window and into the tower.
Thank God, she said to herself.
She might be stuck in the tower, but at least she was safe. Alex looked around the tower. It wasn't at all what she'd expected. It was a large circular room with no furniture or decoration of any kind. In fact, it was completely empty except for some hay and bird droppings littered around the floor.
Hi, Alex, said a voice inside the tower.
Alex jumped and screamed. She was completely shocked to see Connor sitting up against the tower wall just a few feet away from her.
It took you long enough to get up here, he said with a laugh.
He was eating an apple, and he had the journal open in his lap.
How in the world did you get up here?
Alex demanded. She was still out of breath from her climb.
I took the stairs, Connor said with a mocking grin. I was reading the journal. It says that after Rapunzel became queen, she installed a staircase in her tower so she could come back and visit whenever she wanted. The door to the staircase was on the other side of the tower. We just didn't see it.
Oh, Alex said sheepishly. That would make sense.
Apparently, since Rapunzel was the only known ward of the witch, when the witch died, Rapunzel inherited all the land from her. That's how she became a queen, Connor informed her. But you would have known that if you had just read the journal. It's full of fun facts and helpful hints on how to get inside difficult places.
I suppose, Alex said, and straightened her headband. She wasn't going to let this ruin the accomplishment she had felt after climbing the tower. She turned to look out Rapunzel's window. The tower was surrounded by a sea of trees. Far off into the distance, Alex could barely see the rooftops of a tiny village. Beyond the village was a large mountain range that rolled across the horizon. Now this was exactly what Alex had expected.
It's quite a view, isn't it? Connor asked.
Yes, Alex said, almost in a whisper. It's breathtaking. I just wish we could see it all. Everything in the land of stories. But I did a lot of thinking on my way up here, and I know we have to get home. That's what we need to focus on.
About that, Connor said. You really need to read this, Alex. I've only skipped through a little bit of it. Most of it's hard to read because it's written by hand, but the situation is much more serious than we thought.
He handed her the journal. Alex sat next to him and opened it to the first page and began reading. Dear friends, I don't know how, why, or where you found this journal, but since it has found its way into your possession, I hope that it can be of use to you. What I am about to tell you is going to sound ludicrous, but I ask that you allow me to explain. Had I not seen it with my own eyes, I would have never believed it myself. I am but a simple man from a simple village in the charming kingdom. But I have been to another world. It's a world with people and technologies that our world has only dreamed of, and places we can only imagine. I know it seems absurd, but I promise you that an extraordinary place exists out there. We just can't see it. During my visit, among the many things I experienced, I fell in love. I fell into a love so deep, it was unlike anything I've ever known. I never thought this kind of love was real. It's as if I'm no longer living for myself anymore, but for her. So I must find a way back. I must find a way to see her again. The first time I traveled into the other world was simple. A fairy that knew of his existence allowed me to travel with her. She warned me not to get attached to anything or anyone, but while my brain was obedient to her request, my heart betrayed it. The fairy has since banned me from traveling with her, so this time I must find my way into the other world on my own. Naturally, I didn't know where to start. How does one go about traveling into another world? Who was I even to ask? How would I even be able to ask without appearing like a lunatic? Cinderellian society is very judgmental, and I surely would have been ridiculed if my mission were discovered. I came to the conclusion that I'd have to ask someone who was crazy in their own right, so no one would believe them if they spoke of what I inquired. I needed someone I could trust, but whom would never be trusted by the world. I figured such a person didn't exist, and I lost hope. Until I remember the traveling tradesman. He was infamous for finding naive children in the woods and trading their items of value for items he claimed to be magical. He was rumored to have given Jack the beans that grew his beanstalk. Surely, if anyone had heard of another world, it would be him. He was on the move at all times, since warrants for his arrest had been issued in all the kingdoms. He would be nearly impossible to find, but then again, my entire quest was virtually impossible. Late one night, I traveled to a tavern up the stream from my home. There, I befriended two farmers, and I proceeded to buy them round after round of drinks. After we'd had a few laughs about childhood adventures and adolescent mistakes, I asked them if they had ever heard of the traveling tradesman. They both grew very quiet and were almost offended by the question. I assured them it was purely out of curiosity, and I wasn't accusing them of anything. I purchased another round of drinks, and after they were consumed, the farmers confessed that they had done business with him in earlier years. I traded two goats for a watering can that was supposed to magically water all my crops by itself, one of the farmers said. The damn thing never worked, and it had a leak. It was the biggest mistake of my life. I traded two cows for a goose he told me would lay golden eggs, the other claimed. The goose was male. He gave me a gander. They tried convincing me to call off my search for him, but after one final round of drinks, they told me of the routes he covertly took through the woods. I must have searched every patch of trees in the Charming Kingdom. Finally, in the woods just south of the Red Riding Hood Kingdom border, I found him. The traveling tradesman was an odd, elderly, disheveled man. He wore several layers of raggedy clothing, and he had a long gray beard. There were dark circles under his eyes, and one of the eyes wandered to the left, so it was difficult to tell what or whom he was looking at. He travels with a large cart that was pulled by a single mule. He was making a deal with a small boy holding a chicken when I first saw him.
"Wear this bear claw, and you'll grow up to be the strongest boy in the village," the tradesman told the boy, and then placed a necklace with a large bear claw around his neck and took the chicken from him.
The boy smiled and ran off. The tradesman placed the chicken in the back of his cart. He must have made other trades that day, because he had already collected 2 geese and a pig.
"Are you a friend or a foe?" the tradesman asked me.
"A friend, I believe," I said.
"Oh, good," he said with a jolly clap. "Then what may I do for you, friend? Would you like a bag of magic pebbles to grow into boulders? It'll only cost you a duck. Or perhaps you'd like to trade a swine for a loaf of bread that'll make you never be hungry again."
"No, thank you," I said cautiously. "I've come to ask for advice."
"Advice?" the tradesman said.
The eyebrow above his wandering eye rose.
"That, my friend, is something no one has ever asked me for. What do you wish to know?"
"I'm wondering," I started, but wasn't sure how to put it into words. "What is the farthest distance you've traveled?" The tradesman scratched his beard and thought about it.
"Well, I'd honestly say there isn't a place in this world I haven't been," he told me. "I've traveled from the southwest to the northeast, and from the southeast to the northwest. I've been from the bottom of the Corner Kingdom to the top of the Sleeping Kingdom, and from the tip of the Elf Empire to the coast of the Fairy Kingdom."
"What about farther than that?" I interrupted him, fearing he might continue listing every journey he had ever taken.
"Farther than that?"
Both of the tradesman's eyebrows were raised now.
"What's farther than that? Only ocean is beyond that, and that's it."
"What about a different world? Have you ever heard of one or how to travel to one?" I finally asked. The tradesman got a funny look in his eyes, or should I say, eye.
"Young man, I've been all over the world and I have never seen any suggestion of there being another," he said.
This topic upset him somehow, and he hopped aboard his cart and took the reins of his mule.
"Wait, please don't go," I pleaded.
"You youngsters always take pleasure in harassing an old man. Well, I won't allow it," he said.
He began to travel up the path. I was so desperate, I stood in front of his mule and was nearly trampled.
"I mean you no harm, old man," I assured him. "You don't understand. I've been to another world, another place and time, and have seen extraordinary things. I need to go back. It may be the greatest wish I will ever have."
My arms were spread out, and I fell to my knees. I felt like an imbecile, confessing a preposterous need to a preposterous man. The tradesman sat still with his good eye fixated on me.
"Is it truly the most desired wish in your heart?" he asked.
"Yes," I pleaded. "I've never wanted anything more in my life."
"If it's a wish you desire, then there's only one thing you need," he said.
"What is that?" I asked him.
"The wishing spell,"
the tradesman said. At first I thought he was joking.
"The wishing spell?" I asked him. "You mean the childish legend?"
"It's as real as the nose on my face," the tradesman said. "Many men have spent their lives trying to obtain it. Legend has it that if you collect a series of objects and place them in a close proximity, the collector's one true wish will be granted."
I didn't know whether or not to believe him. Perhaps he was harassing me now. My brain was critical, but my heart chose to learn more.
"And how do I find these items?" I asked.
"I don't have the slightest idea," he said.
Now I was frustrated with him. All of that explanation for nothing. I turned my back on him and began heading back home.
"But I know someone who does,"
the tradesman called after me.
"Who?" I demanded.
"I never trade for free,"
the tradesman said, and extended an open palm toward me. I placed a few gold coins in his hand. He kept his hand extended, and I placed a few more coins into it until he was satisfied.
"Her name is Hagatha," the tradesman said.
"Where can I find her?"
"Take this path west into the dwarf forest, past the 3 boulders, and then follow the smoke," the tradesman said,
and that was all the direction he gave. He took the reins of his mule and traveled away from me. Had I been thinking clearly, I would have chased after him and asked for more instructions, but instead, I took off running toward the dwarf forest. I had never been inside the dwarf forest before. I had been told of the danger since I was a child, and once I was there, I knew why I had been warned.
The trees grew so thick and close that someone could be standing 3 feet away from you, and you would never know they were there. It took 2 days to find the three boulders the tradesman had spoken of. They were three large rocks that stuck straight out of the ground and were tilted in a peculiar position. I thought perhaps they might have been pointing at something, so I lowered my head to look in the direction they pointed. The boulders pointed directly between two trees, separated just enough so that you could see a wide patch of the sky, and in this patch, I could see smoke. I ran toward the source of the smoke. Wherever it was coming from was completely off the path, and I almost seriously injured myself jumping over bushes and tree roots as I went. Occasionally, I could see the sky through the tree branches and could tell if I was off track. I must have traveled in circles for hours. Every time I thought I was just about to find the place from which the smoke came, the wind would shift it in another direction. I was lost. Every way I turned looked exactly the same. I felt as if the forest had swallowed me. The sun was setting, and the smoke became harder to see. I started to panic. There was no shelter in sight. I thought for sure a treacherous beast would find me during the night and make a feast out of me. I started running again. I could barely see where I was going at this point. I could hear howling in the distance. I tripped and fell straight through a large thorn bush. I landed hard in the grass on the other side of the thorn bush. I was scraped, scratched, and bleeding. I got to my feet and looked around. I was standing in a large, circular clearing in the forest, surrounded by a large wall of thorn bush. In the center of this clearing was a small hut with a hay roof and a brick chimney, and rising out of this chimney was the smoke I had been following. No wonder it had been so hard to find. I must have been wandering in circles around it, not knowing it was hidden behind the thorn bush. I approached the hut slowly. It had one door and two windows, and that was all. I went to knock on the door, but it burst open before I had a chance. "Who are you?" said the woman who emerged from the hut. I knew from the second I saw her that it was Hagatha. She looked like a human tree stump. She was short and wore a brown hooded cloak. Deep wrinkles circled her face, and one of her eyes was squinted. Her nose was one of the smallest I'd ever seen, and was neighbored by a gigantic mole. "Are you Hagatha?" I asked her. "How did you find me?" she snapped. "I tripped the thorn bush," I said. "But how did you know I was here?" she asked. Her squinted eyes squinted even more. "The traveling tradesman," I told her. "He said you knew of the wishing spell." Hagatha grunted and sighed at the same time. Her lips wrinkled, and she looked me up and down. Reluctantly, she gestured me to follow her inside. "Come in, come in," Hagatha said. The inside of the hut was an utter mess. There were vials of strange liquids everywhere. Some bubbled, some glistened, some steamed. There were dozens of glass jars containing the strangest things. Dead and alive reptiles, insects of every species, even a glass jar of various eyeballs. Even though they had been plucked out of their owner's lids, I swear one of them blinked at me. I was surprised to see how many animals were inside the hut as well. Everything from geese and chickens to hummingbirds and monkeys all resided in cages. They were all restless, prisoners no doubt. "Have a seat," Hagatha instructed. She pointed to a chair at the end of a very large table, so large that it almost took up the entire hut. "I see you are a collector of sorts," I said. She didn't welcome the conversation. She ignored me and collected a few items around the room, a bowl here, a vial there. "The thorn bush surrounding your home is very clever," I said. "It must keep out most unwanted visitors."
"Most," she said, and glared at me. "That thorn bush is from the Sleeping Kingdom. I planted it here, and it grew around my home in a perfect circle, just as it grew around the castle while the queen was in her 100-year slumber. You are the first to break through it."
"I do apologize."
"This will cost you 15 gold coins," Hagatha said, and took a seat across from me.
"For what?" I asked.
"You want to know what the wishing spell items are, don't you?" she asked. "That is why you're here, is it not?"
I reached into my pocket and laid all the coins I had left on the table. Unfortunately, doing business with a tradesman had left me short. "I only have 14 coins," I told her.
Hagatha did not look pleased. "You stupid youth and your wishes. Very well," she said, and scooped up all the coins with one swipe.
She placed a bowl in front of her and emptied the contents of two vials into it, one red liquid, the other blue.
"One eye of an eagle, the wings of a pixie, and the art of a newt," Hagatha said, and added these items into the bowl. "Plus 3 drops of giant blood, the big toe of an ogre, and a straw of gold hay. That completes the potion."
With all the ingredients added, the liquid in the bowl started to smoke and glow. Hagatha leaned over it and breathed it in. She closed her eyes and lost herself in a moment of deep thought. "Does this potion tell you what the wishing spell items are?" I asked her.
"No, but it helps me remember," Hagatha said. "You aren't the first, and you won't be the last person to request the list. Consider yourself warned. Many people have lost their lives trying to acquire these items. They are impossible to collect."
"I'd rather die trying than live the rest of my life wondering if I could have done it," I said.
"Then listen carefully to what I'm about to say, because I'll only say it once," Hagatha said.
I leaned as close to her as I possibly could. The anticipation made every second feel like an hour. This is what I'd come all this way for.
"There are 8, Hagatha said.
She took a deep breath and then listed the items.
"Glass that housed a lonely soul, up till midnight's final toll. A saber from the deepest sea, meant for a groom's mortality. The bark of a basket held in fright, while running from a bark with a bite. A stony crown that's made to share, found deep within a savage lair. A needle that pierced the lovely skin of a princess with beauty found within. A wavy lock of golden rope that once was freedom's only hope. Glittering jewels whose value increased after preserving the false deceased. Teardrops of a maiden fairy, feeling neither magical nor merry."
I repeated the list to myself the entire way home, and wrote the wishing spell list and my journey thus far into this journal. I don't know how I'm going to gather these items, but my goal is to find them and then record how I manage it, in case I ever need to do it again. If you're reading this, I hope it means I succeeded. And if you're reading this and are about to start a journey of your own, I wish you luck.
"Wow,"
Alex said, looking up from the journal.
"You can say that again," Connor said. "You read that much faster than I did."
"Did you read any farther?" Alex asked. "Did he find all the items? Did he make it back?"
"I don't know. There are a lot of pages missing," Connor said.
Alex scanned through the list of the wishing spell items. She hadn't expected them to be hidden within riddles.
"Most of these are pretty easy to figure out," she said. "Like, a needle that pierced the lovely skin of a princess with beauty found within. That's obviously the spindle on Sleeping Beauty's spinning wheel.
And a wavy lock of golden rope that once was freedom's only hope," Connor said. "That's totally a lock of Rapunzel's hair."
Connor looked around the space where he was sitting. From between two floorboards, he pulled out a lock of long golden hair.
"Found one," Connor said. "One of the first things I noticed when I got up here was how much that Rapunzel girl shed. Now we're 1/8 of the way home."
Alex carefully wrapped the lock of golden hair in a tissue from her school bag.
"What do you suppose glass that housed a lonely soul up till midnight's final toll means?" she asked. "Whose soul was covered in glass?"
"I know," Connor said. "Cinderella's glass slipper. That covered the sole of her foot."
"Of course," Alex said. "This list was spoken. Maybe Hagatha meant soul, like on a foot, but the man heard it as soul, like a person's spirit. Connor, you're a genius."
"There's an alternative spelling?" Connor asked, but Alex went on.
"I wonder what the bark of a basket held in fright while running from a bark with a bite means," said Alex, thinking hard. "Basket, basket, basket. Bite, bite, bite. Little Red Riding Hood! Her basket must be made out of tree bark, and the bark with a bite is talking about the big bad wolf."
"Okay," Connor said. "That would make sense."
Alex stood up and started pacing around the tower.
"Glittering jewels whose value increased after preserving the false deceased. That's a tough one," she said. "Who was falsely deceased?"
"Didn't people think Snow White was dead after she bit into the poison apple?" Connor asked.
"Yes, that's right," said Alex, jumping up and down. "She had a coffin made of glass and jewels from the dwarf mines. That must be what it means."
"I'm so glad Dad and Grandma read to us so much growing up," Connor said. "Whoever would have thought it would be this useful?"
"Teardrops of a maiden fairy, feeling neither magical nor merry. I guess we'll just have to find a fairy who has recently broken up with her boyfriend or something," Alex surmised.
"You don't think we could just kick her and make her cry?" Connor asked. "That just seems easier to me."
Alex ignored him and vigorously flipped through the journal again.
"Glass slipper, check. Spindle, check. Coffin, check," Alex said. "According to the notes scribbled in the margins, the author of the journal seems to agree with our guesses.
I still don't know what some of these things are, though. Like a saber from the deepest sea, meant for a groom's mortality. Or a stony crown that's made to share, found deep within a savage lair.
Like I said, there are a lot of pages missing, Connor said. Alex was disheartened by this. The items they knew of seemed virtually impossible to collect.